Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Like I said before, my name's Gary. I am an alcoholic. I ought to add a drug addict. I woke up about 6 o'clock this morning, and I rolled over. And after dancing for 3 hours last night, I suffered from a lot of pain. And the first thing I thought of was, I need pain pills. And I've been sober long enough that when that happens to me, first of all, it reminds me that, A, I'm still an alcoholic and a drug addict, and B, that AA works and I don't have to drink or use. And the most common thing in the world is for me to take a pill to feel better. The second thing that went through my mind was that, my God, what am I going to say at that meeting today? And the third thing was that, Gary, it doesn't matter. You know, whatever you say, it'll be okay, and the meeting will be okay. It'll be all right. This meeting is entitled, Half Measures Avail as Half. And what it says here is half measures avail as nothing. And I've used that little statement a lot. There's been several times in the time that I've been sober where I went bananas without chemicals. And since I didn't drink or use anymore, I seriously considered suicide several times. I tried to eat myself to death for a while. And I just finally figured out that I was going to, you know, I had a bunch of choices. I could either drink and use, I could commit suicide, or I could go crazy. I thought of that for a while. I'd just get locked up in a rubber room, and I wouldn't be responsible for myself. They'd put me on Thorazine and keep me mellow a lot. And the fourth decision was that I could grow up. And that was the hardest one I had to make. And I made the decision to grow up and become an adult. And one of the things that I used when I'd go crazy is I'd just start chanting over and over again, half measures avail is nothing. Half measures avail is nothing. And block my mind of the other thing. And ask this protection and care with complete abandon. It amazes me how screwy I can get sober. It really does. I walk around here this morning, and I look at everybody, and I take their inventory, and I think, that person's too fat. That person's too skinny. I think, oh, God, look at those shoes. And, wow, what a hairdo. And until I just, you know, what happens is that I'm really critical of myself. I started out the day with, you know, looking in the mirror saying, I can't go looking like this. I look terrible. And then it just goes on and on and on. Until I'm just so super critical of everybody, I make myself sick. I guess I'll tell a little bit about myself. I've been sober since July 4th, 1975. And I found Alcoholics Anonymous through a treatment center. Because, you know, I don't know about you folks, but I went to a treatment center not so much to get sober or get clean or straight or anything. I went to a treatment center to get a wife to come home. So I did, and she did. And then they screwed me up. See, all I was going to do was con everybody and get things going my way again. And I really thought I was fooling them all in the treatment center, you know, talking the talk. And saying what I thought they wanted me to say. And then they made the mistake of taking me to a spiritual breakfast, an AA spiritual breakfast. And there I saw in AA what I had always wanted out of life, people with their family. I always had wanted to be a family man and always ended up down at the tavern. No matter, you know, I was not in control of my drinking. Even when I tried to do things with the family, I'd have to stop at the tavern and write a check before we left town. And then I'd get in there and have one. And 2 hours later, my wife was dragging me out, and I couldn't figure out why she was mad. I was having fun. Anyhow, I found AA in that treatment center, and I haven't had a drink or use since then. And so, well, I think one of the reasons that AA is growing the way it is because of treatment centers. I think they're fantastic, and I think they're really doing their job. And I think we're doing our job in here. I really do. And they support some of us, like about half the folks in the room. They're supporting me because I don't work. My wife works and supports me. I ought to just get that out of the way. I'm on strike right now at Crown Zeller back, and one of the things, you know, that I think about people is the first thing they do with a little girl is they give her a doll and make it really important for her to have babies. And one of the things they do with a little boy is they give him a hammer and a saw and a screwdriver and make it really important for him to work. And so therefore, women that don't have babies seem to have a hard time with that. And guys that don't have jobs really suffer. And I've been really suffering. Because it's hard for me to accept the fact that I'm okay if I'm not working. I'm okay if I'm a house husband, if I'm doing the washing and the ironing and the babysitting and the cooking and the shopping and my wife works. I'm still okay. My sobriety is still successful as long as I don't drink or use. And I'd be the best human being I can be. And I don't think I'm a half bad house husband. I'm doing the best job I can do. Sometimes I get preoccupied watching TV and get chocolate stains on my slip, but I can't wait to buy this new bowl with the fabric softener right in the product, you know, see how that works, this detergent. And I'm staying sober doing that, and everybody's doing okay, and so I think I'm doing all right. I'd like to introduce my co-chair person, Lady Nancy from Seattle, and I'd like to know why she's called Lady Nancy. Maybe she'll tell us.
I'm Nancy, and I'm an alcoholic. And that lady got pinned on me when I first came on the program, and my sponsor said not to get rid of it, so I never did. It's meaningless. But it does kind of mean something to me. It's sort of a goal to remind me. AA gave me a lot of dignity and self-respect and all that, and I kind of keep the lady in front of my name so that I retain that dignity and self-respect when I'm out there in the world doing my thing. But when Gary asked me last night to help him chair this meeting, I said, okay, fine, and now I'm not going to think about it until tomorrow, so I won't get nervous. But I did have to think about the title a little bit, because it was a little bit odd. Half Measures had gotten me in and out of college and in and out of the Nishri and Shoshu Academy and out of my church of my choice and in and out of a whole bunch of situations that were pretty meaningless. You know, but when I came to AA, something down inside of me wouldn't allow me to go at it half-assed, okay? Something inside of me picked me up and got me to my second meeting all by myself, you know, scared to death and crying my little eyes out, okay? And wouldn't let me just do it with part of myself, even though I was not all there anyway, but it got me there day after day and, you know, instilled in me some kind of faith in a program that I knew zero about. You know how you feel when you first come on the program? For me, it was just sort of a calmness inside. You know, like I knew I was in the right place. I knew that something good was going to come of this, but I didn't know what it was. You know, I knew nothing about the program. I'd come around when I was about 13 because I thought my parents were alcoholics at the time, but I don't remember anything about that. And what really blew my mind is I ran into a guy up in Vancouver, B.C., and I thought, he looks fairly familiar. And I walked up to him and I said, do you know me? And he said, yeah. Yeah, you used to be at my ELA team meeting. And I went, whoa. And he said, I planted a seed, and you grew. Coming back. You know, I had to go out there and I had to go find out what this alcoholism was all about that I thought was my parents' disease was actually my own. And I know that that AA kind of gave me my parents back. my dad and I did a lot of fighting and crazy things when I was a teenager. I'm the youngest of three girls, and my sisters are about 10 years older than I am. They're real close together in age, but I was kind of an afterthought. And since there were no boys in my family, my dad and I kind of palled around a lot together. You know, like we worked on my car when I got my first car. Taught me all about it. And we skied together for about 9 or 10 years, and we did all kinds of things. But when it came around to drinking, we did those kind of crazy things together, too. You know, we fought very bitterly, and it was real, real confusing for me. And one of the most dynamite things that ever happened when I came on the program was about a week after being here. I was just going nuts, you know. I had this job, and I hated it, and I came home from a meeting one night, and I was just crying. I said, I knew I have to get out of this job, you know. I just have to. I have to do it right now. And my dad threw his arms around me and said, calm down. He said, when you get up tomorrow morning, go out, you know, fill out some applications, do some interviews, you know. Just get a good night's sleep, go out and do that tomorrow, and I'm sure everything will be fine. And I got a job the next morning, you know, the one that allowed me to go to meetings at night and work during the day and stay sober, okay? And I just, you know, I remember that moment with my father because he was never able to do that before in my whole life. They were to just throw his arms around him. He never could do that with anybody, you know. And today my parents are living halfway around the world from me. And it's just, you know, I wouldn't be able to live without them being gone. You know, I always think of these things that I want to say. But since I'd come to the program before they went, and we shared some really good things before then, I don't feel that that loss and emptiness like, oh, darn, you know, I was such a shit, and I can't talk to them now. We got warm together, my whole family. They accepted my husband in and warmed up to him and made him feel like part of our family. And maybe sometimes we feel like we stick out, okay? My sister smoked dope, and their old men smoked dope, and my mom and dad drank, and my dad smoked. And they do a whole bunch of other things that we don't do, and sometimes we feel like we should slip, you know, that we should maybe allow them to do that stuff in my home. But that half-measure thing stepped in. I can't allow anybody to drink in my house. It makes me feel so weird, okay? It makes me feel like somebody's treading around in my soul. So I had to look for my two older sisters, who I've looked up to my whole life, and say, I can't allow you to smoke marijuana in my house if you come over to dinner, you know? If you don't want to smoke it here and you don't want to come, okay, you know, I'll accept that, but I just can't let you because it doesn't make me feel comfortable, you know? And the programs allow me to do that. Really important step for me. Another thing that was important for me when I came around was I mentioned a couple attempts at getting religion before, and I wear a tiny set of praying hands that my sponsor gave me when I was a year sober. My sponsor's a real dynamite lady. She's a minister in a church, and I met her before I came on the program. And we hated each other, of course, because I was using and she wasn't. And she shared with me some of the beliefs of her church that amazingly paralleled my own, okay? And so I feel real comfortable with that. And in order to stay close to that lady, my husband and I moved in right next door to her and her husband, and I only have to go across the backyard to go talk to the lady who keeps my program together. And sometimes even that becomes difficult, you know. Like when I had to call her on the phone, I never would. But now I just, you know, I just trot across the wet grass and open the gate and knock on her back door and say, hey, Jack, you know, I'm bananas or what's going on. Or I pour myself a cup of coffee and sit down. And it's a real warm feeling, okay. It's a real good feeling for me. I don't know what this talk is leading you to. I'm afraid that I might not have let you know anything about myself because I'm scared to death to do that. Hiding up here behind the podium, and I'm looking at all three of these mics and thinking that they're about this big, and they're hiding my face in them. But I just I just know that this program, well, that my higher power enabled me to embrace the program with my whole heart, you know, and that the program has allowed me to embrace the rest of my life with my whole heart. And there have been times in the last 2.5 years that I have backslided on that, and I have hid, and I have been definitely afraid to do a whole lot of things, you know, to change jobs, to talk to my husband someday. That's real weird, you know. And the person I love the most, I am afraid to talk to, you know, because I put all kinds of expectations on the world, and very slowly the program is trying to teach me not to do that, to say, okay, you know, you've got to ride with it and flow with it, and everything's going to be just fine. There have been a couple times when my higher power has dipped in and just cupped me under both elbows and held me up and allowed me to say the right thing. And those times were last June when my husband got fired from his job, and we are quite a bit in debt. You know, and I called him on the phone to ask him to take something out of the freezer for me, and he laid this bomb on me. He says, I got fired today at 2 o'clock. And I said, okay. And it was fine. I'll talk to you about it when I get home. Don't worry. Everything will be fine. And I hung up the phone and I turned around in the very busy bank that I work in and I started to cry. And I ran downstairs, you know, and I dried my eyes and I said, I cried for about 5 minutes before I dried my eyes, but I said, okay, now, you know, you had your 5 minutes to break down and be scared and think that the whole world's going to come crashing down. Now you're going to go back upstairs and make all your coworkers think that everything's fine, because it really is, and then you're going to go home and you're going to be able to sit down and talk to your husband and see that this is fine, you know. I, who have to have all my security written out in the form of checks that come in weekly and my whole little home that I can go to, and my higher power enabled me to say, okay, you know, who cares? It'll be fine. It'll be just fine, you know. And now when I hear of earthquakes in Iran and I hear of fighting in the streets and shit, and that's where my folks are, I think everything's just going to be fine. It'll be fine. I know that he won't allow them to be hurt. And sometimes when I'm driving home at night and it's raining and I'm bananas in the car and I'm scared to death, I know everything will be fine. You know, I know that I can rely on this program and what it's taught me. And the most important thing of all is that I don't have to think about doom and very horrible things. You know, I don't have to project those anymore. That because I'm sober today, and because deep down inside that calm feeling is still with me, I know I'm doing the right thing, that everything is just going to be fine. Thank you. Well, there's only a few people here that I know, but one lady slipped in while I was talking, and I would really like to hear from her. Susie?
By the way, there's a step on this side for those of you that aren't lumberjacks. Wait a minute, that didn't come off right.
I don't know what to say. I've fallen in. I have a bad habit. I do that. I'm from Seattle, and I do that at Fremont. Nancy and I are in the same. Well, we go to the same. What would you call it, Estelle? The same. Same AA group. And I don't know what to say to follow that. I have a tendency to read newspapers at Fremont, like I do in Portland. I guess. If you've been on AA as long as I've been, pretty soon you have a tendency not to be rude. You just turn a lot of clutter out. And I came to AA in this town 14 years ago. And I don't have a lot to say for Portland, and I don't have a lot to say for Portland AA, because I don't have a resentment against this city, but I was drunk here 10 years on AA. I think probably I'm familiar with Damish. Damish was a place that, when you talk about, I do believe totally in Alcoholics Anonymous, so I don't know where I'd be today if it wasn't for AA now. And the thing that Nancy was talking about, you know, being afraid to reveal yourself. And it's so funny. One doesn't, you never judge anybody by what they say. You know, it's kind of like actions speak louder than words. And I think the nicest thing I heard about AA was that sermon. I'd rather see a sermon than to hear one any day. And so I will dispense with sermons and tell you what I was like and how I've changed and what I'm like now. And I think when you stick to those basics of Alcoholics Anonymous, you can pretty well, you know, cover, you know, yourself as a person without having to tell everybody what you do. And I came to AA, I'm 38 now, and I came to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 22 years old in Portland. And Torchy is a Portland person who made her first 12-step call on me. And unfortunately, at that time, I only had an alcohol problem when I was 22. And then damage took over. And I'm what they call now an alcoholic manic depressive. And so I have a... After 120 shock treatments in that institution to treat me for a mental disorder, I came always out of damage, straight to AA. And so a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous know me, and I don't speak very highly of psychiatrists. I have very little respect for them, probably because they have the number one suicide rate in the nation, or maybe Dennis Whistler's now, and they're second, but I was one of those people who unfortunately got all tied up missing the point. And I say a prayer all the time now. And it's called, Dear God, please don't let me miss the point. And the point step one of this program. And, you know, regardless of what we have underneath that's wrong with us, the main fact lies that if I drink, and I haven't had a drink for 4 years, September 2nd, 74 was my last one. I remember I flew into the city and my mother said, if you come into town, I'll call the police. And my father always used to be very afraid of what would happen to me. You know, he thought that I would probably kill myself. And so he always seemed to intervene where AA couldn't do a whole lot for me because Dad would come and put me in damage. And, so I can't blame AA for that. I guess it's just a conglomeration of a whole lot of things. But that's kind of history right now. And I moved to Seattle on a running drunk. I'm a runner. I'm still a runner. And I have a tendency whenever there's an old thing, she was talking about world situations. I believe, you know, don't panic and get manic. And I think the only thing that will destroy me will be fear. And it's fear that drives me to drink. And it's fear that drives me to react the way I do. And I don't know, I still have a lot of character defects that I wish I could get over. I've kind of gotten to that point as far as AA goes of learning how to be honest with myself when it comes to alcohol as a problem. You know, I admit I'm powerless over alcohol. And I'm beginning to think the healthiest attitude for anybody to have is to admit you're powerless over everything. I mean, that's people, places, and things. But I, too, am like Nancy, but in a different way. I'm not afraid to risk, and I risk all day, and year after year. And I guess I'm one of those people that I think you don't grow if you don't risk. And I firmly believe that this program is my center, and this program is salvation. If you want to talk about salvation, you better talk about AA. And I'm kind of divided myself. I have a problem with, I believe what the Bible says about the house divided against itself cannot stand. And using this program that I try to keep my center. And I think being a Roman Catholic on my right is a difficult thing. And I'm divided heritage-wise. I have Greek Orthodox on one side and Roman Catholic on the other, and so I feel like kind of a half-breed. But it boils down that in AA I can get rid of all of that religion and develop the concept of spirituality in this program. And I don't know. I'm divided in a whole lot of ways. I feel like church on this side, state on this side, me in the middle, and I think everybody goes through the same feelings. You know, it's like... I'm a student at the University of Washington. I'm not too afraid to reveal myself because everybody knows what I do. I mean, I go to school, and I was really happy that I could get that when I sobered up. 4 years ago, my doctor said I was unemployable, And so that whole first year, I spent going to meetings at Fremont, two meetings a day. And some people might call AA an easy program. I think it's very simple, but I had a real struggle in managing to keep my sobriety. Today, especially, I've been in bars all morning, bickering with people about attitude. And and I'm really kind of grateful I'm not drunk right now with the bullshit I have to put up with in this city between my family and my friends from back 10 years ago. And the way I feel right now is that if it wasn't AA, I think I'd be drunk. And I don't know. Seattle's the... I was raised here. I was raised in Lake Oswego, which was the first tragedy that ever happened. The second thing was I went to school here all the time. And I don't know. I guess Portland is nice in Seattle. The whole coast depends on whether you're happy with your sobriety, and I'm not happy with my sobriety. And I'm not very comfortable right now with who I am. And I don't like the way I live. And I live a life that is based on playing all in towards the middle. And that always manages to fall at my head. And so, but that's a bad defect. I have a real problem with anger. I wish I could get it out right now, but I'm afraid to lose control. I have an even worse problem with fear. And people, manic depression is only a symptom of the real problem. And there's one line about it in Dr. Pinion in the big book. And there are those manic depressives that we do not understand. And those are the ones who sit back after years of sobriety with eyeballs sunk in the back of their heads ready to blow their brains out. And I'm not at that point only because I have a strong faith. I don't know. My trip down here is not the best today. I'm suffering an awful lot right now from severe mood swings. I haven't had a drink, and I have no intention of drinking. But it's really uncomfortable for me to be really be honest with who I am or what I'm doing here, because I'm even beginning to feel like I don't belong in AA. And I think that comes about from really being very sick right now. I'm just kind of mentally off. And I think reality makes me very sick. And she talks about the world and reading papers, and I have to do that all the time. That's my field. And I just feel that it's depressing, the whole world situation. I have a hard time listening to AA telling everybody how happy they are. I know that that's a situation if you only have your own home environment. But I'm in a little different space. I'm not married. I don't have any children, and I never have been. And so I see the world. And the way I feel about myself right now is I'm so centered on looking outside of me that I've lost perspective of myself. And I think that's why I come back to AA, you know, to really get down to basics. I'm an alcoholic, and right now I'm suffering from a manic episode. I go into those. When I, instead of getting drunk, I go into one of my manic phases, and I run. And I have to return to Seattle by Tuesday. And I guess I could go on and on and on, but what it boils down to is sobriety is the greatest right now for me. I have very little mental sobriety. I have physical sobriety. And I have a little bit of mental sobriety, enough to discern, you know, in my life. But emotional sobriety, I'm up and down. And I wish I could say something of more hope, but it's all very depressing right now, frankly. I mean, the whole, my life is depressing to me. Other people get a bang out of the way I live. I find it very depressing. And I'm walking a tightrope, and I better not get one, and I won't make it.
Thank you. Phyllis said last night that she'd like to limit our life stories to 5 minutes. I'd really like to make that three or four. I'd really like to hear from a lot of people. Here in Portland at these young people conventions, we pride ourselves in a lot of group participation. I can say that word on a better day. We don't have speaker meetings. We have participation meetings. And I really enjoyed what Lady Nancy said. That's one of the reasons why I asked her to come up here and help me. because I've seen her before in here, and I've seen her in Portland, and I mean in Seattle, and CTAC, and she talked about not being able to talk to the person you love the most. That happens with me too, a lot. The wife I got sober for, I got sober and found myself wondering why I was married to her, because I found that she was a lot better for me, a lot better mother than a wife. And I really changed my ideas about what a wife is since I got sober. I thought a wife, when I was drinking, a wife to me was somebody that was a servant. Somebody to take care of me when I was drunk, somebody to clean up after me when I got sick, somebody to call up the boss when I didn't want to go to work, somebody to walk a half a mile to the store in the rain to get me more wine. And when I got sober, I found out that's not what a wife is. A wife ought to be your best friend. And, my wife is my best friend, I hope. To me, she is. And I'd really like to hear from her. Luann?
And I'm now calling. Just before this meeting started, I said, I'll go to your meeting if you don't call on me. And he said, okay. And I don't know. I guess one of the things that the topic of this meeting brings up to me is that half measures of elder half is the topic there. Is that I always wanted to be, you know, the best person on the job, the best mother, the best wife, the very best at everything I did. And none of that ever happened. I never lived up to my expectations of me, and therefore none of you did either. Where I'm at right now with that is I'm really trying to be the very best person that I can be today to me. And I'm not the best mother. I'm not the best wife. I'm not the best at my job. I'm just me. And the way that I found that out was through you people, the way that I found out who I am, what I'm doing here, what my purpose is through you. And I'm finding out that I don't know anything. You know, I know very little. I was on this program about 6 months, and I thought I had it by the tail. I knew, you know, I knew what there was to know about everything. I guess I should probably back up a little bit. And for those of you that don't know me, when I came into these rooms with people like you, I was much too fine a person to be here. I wasn't that bad. I couldn't be an alcoholic. I was too young. I knew too much. I'd never had a DWI. All of those things. He gave me some suggestions to work with. One of them was very simple. Don't drink and go to meetings. And by the grace of God, I did follow that one. Some of the other ones you gave me was to find a sponsor, preferably a female sponsor. And I immediately went out and found a male sponsor. Then you told me to not become emotionally involved for the first year, and I immediately became emotionally involved with my male sponsor. I'm married to him now. And it's not happily ever after. I guess, you know, one of the hardest things I've had to listen to from you folks is be careful what you pray for, because you might get it. And I always wanted a husband and 2.8 children and 2 cars in the garage and a house with a white picket fence, and I got it. You know, and I'm sitting here saying, okay, now what do I do? Every time I get my shit all together, I step in it. I just am not proficient at anything that I do anymore. And it's neat to feel that. I'm still really judgmental. I'm obnoxious and pushy. But little by little, I'm seeing those things. And I'm through you. And I don't like being up there.
I noticed while he's hiding that my husband said don't call on me, and I'm not going to because he hits harder than I do. So, one thing in the program has given me a lot of really neat friends, and some of them are real old friends from when I first walked in the doors, and some of them are a little bit newer, and I'd like to hear from one of my newer friends, Gary.
My name's Gary. I'm an alcoholic and addict. Half measures available to nothing. Half measures available to half. I sobered up and cleaned up. And the first thing they told me was to come back to a meeting, from the first meeting I came to. Second thing they said was don't take a drink, and that's half measures if you do. My program that I have today is totally different from, when I first come in. All I could handle when I came in was go to a meeting, don't drink, don't take any drugs, go to a meeting, don't drink, don't take any drugs, so on and so on. Then they throw in go to a meeting, don't drink, don't take no drugs, and get a big book. And then they threw in and listen and read. Then they threw in read the book. And then they threw in get a sponsor. And I like the meme that was before here. It says we balked at some of these things. I balked at getting a sponsor. I balked at reading the book. The book had a lot of dust on it the first year. Maybe that's perhaps the reason why I almost went out and drank right a week before my first year in AA. Because I think a lot of the half measures was the reason why I was a week before my first year in AA and wanted to go out and screw it. God damn, I've been here a year, nothing's happened, I was in the same boat, And perhaps the reason was because I half measured it on the steps in the program. And so I was a year and a half sober when I first come to my first conference down here. There's a man that's sitting in the front row that he's never even met me before. And I heard him speaking at this conference last year. And he, prior to that, where I sobered up, there wasn't a whole lot of young people. And I was unique. Had it on the head by the old people. I was unique. And I heard the man talk about a story, and it was exactly like mine. Only maybe about 3 more years added on to it. No longer was unique, so I went back to Spokane with all this overwhelming knowledge and went to my sponsor and said, would you help me do the steps? I probably haven't done them. You probably realized that. And he said, yeah, I realized it. So we went over the steps. And from that time in my life is when something started happening. Something started getting I could feel a little more comfortable around people. It was one of the big key things. Self-centeredness. I remember before I came into AA and quite a time on the program, I'd go into a grocery store or any place where there was quite a few people and they're all talking about me behind my back. I remember before I came into AA and quite a time on the program, I'd go into a grocery store or any place where there was quite a few people and they're all talking about me behind my back. I'd laugh. It's just self-centeredness. You walk into a store, everybody, unless you've got a swimsuit on or a frog suit or something like that, they might look at you, but it don't happen. And so these are some of the things that I noticed in my program that I might have been doing something right with the steps, because I no longer walk into a store and everybody was rapping about me behind my back and telling me all the guilty things that I was guilty for. Today, half measures I'd say maybe in the last 2 months, my program was getting a little stagnant as far as growth was concerned. I wasn't going downhill too much, but I wasn't, you know, making any progress as far as getting more comfortable. I moved over to Seattle, and things weren't progressing. Until this meeting right here, I finally realized that what kept me going in the beginning when I was first in AA could keep me going some more, and that's perhaps wanting some more, not just getting floating along and being stagnant. I think that's where the half measures availed me. Nothing is where I'm at today. That for me to be more comfortable and get some more of this stuff that I've already got, I've got to do something about the steps some more. And I wasn't. I was sliding on them, letting them slack off here and there and here and there. And that's no good. I'll shut up. I got one thing to say. It was Charlie that was down here, the man that I never met before. They helped me with the program. There was a couple hundred people down here, and I was no longer unique. At first, it was kind of an ego blow, but it's the way it works. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. I don't have the opportunity to do this but about once a year, and I'd like to call on the man that's helped me as much as anybody and helps me a lot still, and helped me yesterday, and helped me today because he's here, and helps me just because I'm a better person for having known him. And I can't even think of his name. Roy. I've been around long enough to, you know, really indicate that I haven't been around long enough.
I'm Roy, and I'm an alcoholic. It feels good to say that. Too bad Gary don't get to see me more than once a year to do that, but no excuses. And it's just good being here. I just seen Joel. Haven't seen him for a while. And it's good to see the people I haven't seen for a long time. The theme is half measures availed us half. I've never done anything halfway that I can remember. I was whole hog. Whole hog is alcoholic. Whole hog getting sober, because that's why I'm here today. You know, I really go out all the way. And so it's kind of hard for me to relate to halfway, because, you know, being egotistical, I had to do it. Even when I get in trouble today, it's all the way. If I get in an argument, it's all the way. So, that's why I'm here. Thank God I'm happy today. I do work the program one day at a time. Really enjoy my sobriety. And it's just good to see all the people that I haven't seen for a long time as I look out. It's nice being part of Gary's life. I think being with Gary helps me to stay sober, too. He says I do things for him, but just knowing Gary helps me. And I think that's what the AA program is all about. Give it away, and you'll receive. Thank you.
I think the only place that I've ever seen two grown men that big hug each other is in Alcoholics Anonymous. And this lady in this room that I like hugging too, and the program has given her to me a little bit in little bits and pieces, and I better catch her before she makes a bolt for the door. Debbie?
My name's Debbie and I am an alcoholic. I don't feel too good today, so I'm kind of pissed at her for calling on me, if you know that. I really don't know what to say. Usually, when I talk, you can't shut me out, but one of these, like, my home group or something, that I don't want to take up that much time, because if you get me started, then I don't stop for, like, about 20 minutes or so. I'm real glad to be here, and, I talked one time up at the Vancouver meeting. It was really scary for me, so I think I'm getting used to it. They said, I don't know how this could be good for you. They tell you that this is good for you. All I know is alcohol dragged me down to something that I just couldn't stand to be anymore. It took away everything that I had. I never got to Skid Row, and I didn't have much. I didn't have any DWIs or went to jail or anything like that, you know. But I know what it did to me, and it made me crazy and took away any self-respect I ever had, and just made me a big kid and desperate and scared and insecure. And if I knew a few years ago that just quitting drinking and taking away those chemicals out of my body would make me feel like I do today, I would have done it. But I guess it takes what it takes, and everybody has to go through what they go through. This is a beautiful program, and I'm really, really glad to feel and be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Debbie. I got sober in a place where everybody in there had been sober since Moses was a baby. A place called the Blue Door in Vancouver. There was one guy there that was, I thought, was new too, and he was as crazy as I was. And so I thought, okay, I can stick around. I can relate to this guy because he's nuts. And then the next month he had a birthday. It was his first birthday. It was a year sober. And it kind of let me down. But we're both still here, and I'd like to hear from Charlie.
Hi, my name's Charlie, and I'm an alcoholic. There's some really special people here today that I probably only see at conferences. And that's always neat, and that's one of the reasons why I come to see how everybody else is doing in their life. A couple special people here in the front row, Mike and Joel, are really an important part of my life. Joel's my brother, and Mike's a really good friend, and Mary's a good friend. I've got hundreds of good friends here where I never had any friends at all during my life when I was drinking. You know, fair weather drinking buddies. One fellow was talking about people in the grocery stores looking at you. I know my first year of sobriety, I kind of went through that fly syndrome. You know, I felt like every day my fly was down, and you know, people were looking at me all the time. I felt real strange, you know. But kind of outgrew that after a period of time, and it seemed that way. You know, and I've had a lot of good things happen to me in this program. I'm really totally grateful for the privilege to be here, because you know I feel it is a privilege to be sober today. My life gets better each day. I have some stagnant parts in my life. You know, Nancy talked about it, taking a risk. I do take a risk on a regular basis, so I can grow, because I know if I don't take a risk, I'll stagnate, and my life doesn't get better. It's easy for me to stay in a spot where it's comfortable and not do anything different or new, and it gets back into the old ego trip again. You know, what will people think if I make a mistake? You know, I like making mistakes. It's kind of entertaining. You know, it's fun. It keeps me... it keeps my ego in perspective. You know, I've got about a 300-pound ego, you know. I've got to work on that a real regular basis. You know, speaking of flies, I kind of got into the Peacock Syndrome for a while. My higher power got my attention one day. I was in court and had on a nice tan suit with a brown shirt on and tie and looking real good. And I was up expounding all my great wisdom. And I turned around to walk back, and I looked down, and my shirt tail was hanging out of my fly. I mean, what can you do? I went outside and went to my car and I laughed for about an hour. You know, what can you do? You know, I knew there were people laughing in the front row and everything, and I was looking real good and everything. But that happens to me on a regular basis. You know, my heart probably getting my attention a little bit. You know, the hip, slick, and cool image, you know, just sometimes isn't that great. But I like myself today. I am what I am today. You know, I accept myself. It took me a couple years on this program to accept myself. This is the way I am. When I first came to this program, I was a pretty sick person. You know, I'm going to say I'm the greatest today, but I am better than I was 4 years ago. My life has gotten better, a lot better. You know, I showed up here, I weighed about 235 pounds, and my hair was falling out, and my teeth were breaking off, and I thought I was looking good. So this program's given me a lot of things, physically and mentally, financially, a lot of things that I never dreamt I thought I could ever have. But it has given me a lot of things that I'm so grateful for, and I'm willing to go to any lengths to continue my sobriety, no matter what it is, because my life gets better each day. I go through some peaks and valleys, but my valleys aren't so deep anymore. I'm kind of a terminal optimist. You know, a lot of people think that I hide out on my bad days because they always see me. It looks like I'm having a pretty good time. You know, it is. I'm having a party every day. You know, I spent thousands of dollars and lots of time trying to have a good time, and I found out I was a fool and it was free all this time, and it's at these meetings and around a fellowship of people that I love. And, you know, it helps keep me sober. I've never had so many good friends and people that I love and care about today. And, you know, the half measure is part of it. Roy talked about, I didn't, you know, half measures. You know, I was insane at anything that I did. You know, and the same in my sobriety. I'm all out. You know, I'm willing to go to any lengths to continue it. And I like it. I can say it's a gift and a privilege because I see a lot of people flopping around out there, not knowing what AA is. They think it's an automobile club, you know. And, you know, things, you know, I just see a lot of people having a hard time. You know, and that's why I'm so grateful. It's a privilege. And I love you, Gary.
Good.
Let me see who I can... Oh, I know who I can bring on now. There's a gentleman down here that we love and recall, Tom the Cop.
Thank you, Nancy. I'm going to take my coat off because I want you to know that I don't intend to walk away from here in just 30 seconds flat or say a whole bunch of us. My name is Tom, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm very grateful to be here. This is the first convention I've attended, and this month happens to be my fourth birthday. And I'm also a very grateful and humble member of the North Lake Group, which is in Seattle. Like that. Right. And there's a few of us here today. I'm very grateful also to meet the people from Portland and from some of the other surrounding areas. First time I attended a meeting outside the Seattle area was in Kamloops, British Columbia. And, you know, I felt every bit as welcome there as I do anywhere else that I go, meetings that I've been to many, many times, such as in the Seattle area. You know, I believe the theme is half measures avail at half, and I'm learning something about that, in particular just in the last few weeks, particularly the last 2 or 3 days, and that is that if I put a half effort into something, I'm going to get half result back. And in that particular area, a lot of it has to do with things that need to take place in my life, as well as the things that I need as opposed to what I want. Every once in a while, I get a little bit resentful because some of what I want isn't a need. I can appreciate the humor of that even if you can't. So I've been doing a lot of praying to my higher power lately, which I choose to call God, and slowly but surely bits and pieces of the puzzle are starting to be put together, and I'm finding out that needs are very definitely being met, and if the needs are being met, then that's all that really needs to take place. Accepting that, just like I've accepted totally and completely the first step of Alcoholics Anonymous, makes it a lot easier on me. Somehow or another, it lifts some of the burden away as far as wants and needs are concerned. It allows me to get my priorities in perspective as far as my needs are concerned. I can have a lot of my wants met. I have a new car, you know, and I have a nice job and a number of things like that, but and those are wants, and they're definitely needs, too, because if I didn't work, then I wouldn't be able to support my new car, I wouldn't be able to live where I do, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, ad finitum, or ad finitum, or whatever you want to call it. But my needs are being met today. I have food, warmth, shelter, and I have a lot of loving friends. And those are the things that are very important to me in my life. Number one is my sobriety, though. Without that and without the fellowship, I just don't know where I would be today. And I choose not to be without it, and I accept it gratefully and openly as a part of my life. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you, Tom. I would like to hear from a lady I've never heard from. I hope that she'll come up. Rebecca? Becky's helped me a lot, too. I don't know if it's happened to any of you, or rest of you, but I started out hating some people and ended up loving them. And this is one of the people I didn't like very much.
I think that's Tom, and I don't know about that one. Hi, I'm Rebecca, and I'm an alcoholic. The reason Gary has not heard from me ever before is because I hide from doing this right here. My sobriety's been kind of backwards. I didn't... one of the things that kept me away from AA, I think, was this right here. My philosophy is that if I was going to stay sober, I had to do everything that I was scared to death to do, and I used to use drinking to do. I'd have to learn how to do that straight, and it's taken me a long time to get up here. But I find myself back there. I kind of had a feeling that Gary might call me. My higher power might have told me. And I said, that's all right. That's not going to be too bad. I said, boy, I don't know. If something's going wrong with me, I'm kind of looking forward to it. I don't know if that's good or bad. Half males avail this half. That's an odd thing. I really liked what my husband had to say about, you know, he never did anything halfway, and I'll attest to that. but I love him for it because, you know, he's the one person in my life who really helped me stay straight. And, I came to Vancouver for 3 months, and I've been here over 5 years now. Because when I came to Vancouver, I found a lot of people who I'd never been around that kind of people before, really loving, caring people. It was the first time I ever felt loved in my life. And I figured I better stick around if I was going to stay straight. And I have, and I'm very proud of that. It took me a long time to admit that I was an alcoholic. Me, an alcoholic, you know, I couldn't be. But with his help and a lot of other people, I realized that I was, and that was a blow to my ego, too. I can really identify with Charlie about being humble. It's not too easy sometimes. But for over a year, I decided every day, yes, I'm an alcoholic, and then by the end of the day, no, I'm not an alcoholic. And I went through that for a long time. And now I'm glad that I am an alcoholic, because I don't have to worry about that, waking up the next morning and wondering what I did the night before and feeling like a fool and feeling guilty and all that kind of stuff. I'm very happy, and I owe it to a lot of people around this area, more than I could actually name up here, but there's a lot of people in this auditorium right now that's really helped me. Thanks a lot. Oh, wow.
y'all look really like wonderful people, but being as I'm from way up there, and I don't know a whole lot of any of you, is there anybody who really would like to talk right now?
I'm Carla, and I'm an alcoholic. And I haven't felt like talking since I got here. This is my first convention. I didn't even know there was such a thing. And wild. Just went across the street. I wanted to get away from you people for a while. I couldn't imagine that. Got to dump some good bullshit. So I went to the Garden of Gethsemane across the street. It's a carnival. And I sat there, and I decided I should talk with my higher power and find out what was wrong. And, you know, the way I choose to talk to my higher power is not the way I used to in church. And I, you know, I don't believe it. Why me? You know, here I am. I'm broke. I didn't pay to come down to this convention. I didn't even know it was here. And I'm here. I don't really know, you know. I have the slightest idea why all of a sudden I'm lucky enough to be sitting here with a bunch of beautiful people when only about 30-some hours ago I was on a self-pity trip that would, you know, blow my head to pieces. And I thought I better get up here and thank my sponsor, who I haven't called much. I've been sober a year, the 15th of this month, and I've only called on AA people when I'm completely loony. And have been running the show a while and decide that I'm just about at the spot again where I think I'm going to go look for some Valium or take a drink. And then I said, oh, God, you know, I don't want that. But I don't know what's happening. Well, I choose sometimes to make this program very complicated. And I go on a real long head trip. And I have to know the whys of everything. And I want to know what God's will is for me. And I want him to come down and sit with me and tell me what I'm supposed to do next. And in my sobriety, 2 weeks ago, I was in Anchorage, Alaska. That was another thing that I received on this program that I don't understand, and it wasn't in my plans. It wasn't something that I set up like I used to set everything up. But I walked into a meeting, and, you know, I kept saying, I am in Anchorage, Alaska. I flew here. You know, my plane was paid for, and I don't feel strange being with these people. I don't know one person in this room, and I know every one of them in some small way. And a young gal who had been on the program a week came up and scared me and said, here's a cup of coffee, ran over, got me a chair, and said, you know, nice to have you here. Where are you from, you know? And I said, Kent, Washington. And she says, boy, I'm glad you're here because I'm so scared, you know. I'm sitting there thinking, wow, you know, people care. Boy, that's fantastic. And I'm trying to talk 3 minutes, and for me that's almost impossible. I have a motor mouth. Something I don't think. And I don't keep the program simple, and I don't do the things that I've been told, you know. I'm wondering what I'm going to be when I grow up, if I ever do. And the neatest thing happened when I walked in the door from giving my higher power all kinds of good shit again, telling them it's okay, you know, you can have it, because I can't handle it. Two black fellows walked up to me, you know, and I'm a little bit afraid of people, unless today they have these tags on. And I, oh, wow, that's a stranger, you know, what are they going to do to me? And he said, what are you wearing that tag for? You know, I thought, should I say anything? You know, should I tell him, oh, God, I'm an alcoholic, you know, he'll look at me like some people do, you know, you got spots on your face or what does an alcoholic look like? And I said, he says, there's a lot of young people running around this hotel with those tags on, too. He said, and I really want to know what's going on here, you know? And I said, I'm an alcoholic. Oh, geez, Jesus. How old are you? And I don't like telling my age. I'm quite sane. I'm 37. He says, well, God damn it, I was going to hustle you. And you're an alcoholic? Oh, you know what? Wow. He says, what's an alcoholic? What do you think's an alcoholic? If I get drunk all the time and I smoke pot, I suppose that makes me an alcoholic. And I said, I don't know what you want me to say. But I said, I'm on my way in there to go to a meeting. He says, what do you do with those meetings? And I said, well, I need to dump some crap. You know, this is funny saying this to a stranger that I've never seen. I don't know why I'm doing that. I don't know why he asked me that. And I don't, it doesn't matter, but there's some things, you know, that people on the program tell me to say. And that I'm, because I hear it so often, it's me now. It's another, I guess it's one of those positive times when I think all of a sudden it's okay to follow some of the things on this program, because I always tried to be like everyone I ever met. And I tried to imitate the people that I thought were pretty sharp, whatever. But today, I have to try very hard to follow what people tell me on this program, because when I don't, I'm hurting again. And I don't need to hurt on this program. But anyway, the conversation led to the fact that he shook his head and he said, you mean I could have that disease? And I don't even know why I said that, you know. He said, I drink a lot, and I'm into drugs, but not too bad. And I said, well, it's a disease of denial. And I don't know why I said that either, because, you know, I am into my fourth step. I'm really realizing that without taking that fourth step, I can't take the rest of them either, and it's pretty hard to 12 step when you really haven't dumped all the crap for me, because I have a lot of crazy guilt left. It doesn't need to be there. And when I'm into that guilt, I'm not liking myself again. And I know the difference now. I know the comfortable feeling of liking myself and feeling a little bit more of who I am. And I know the uncomfortable feeling of feeling that old way, that sickening remorse, waking up in the morning and being sober and saying, why don't I like myself today, you know? And at one of our meetings the other night, I said something about another person on the program, and this person got up and cried. You know, I thought about that for 2 days. Leave it to an alcoholic to think about something for 2 days. And I had to say to myself, I was wrong, you know. Because first I went into the trip, I'm sorry for what I did, but I'm not going to be sorry no more. I'm sick of being sorry. I've always been sorry for everything I did. I don't have to be sorry. And then I said, you know, one of the tips is, I have to admit that I'm wrong, and I really need to get back to can't tell this girl that I was really wrong in saying what I did, because that should have been done on a personal basis, maybe. But I am so glad to be here right now. I'm so glad to have a higher power. I don't have time to tell you about how it was, and I don't want to go into it today because it's not important, but I'm real glad that I'm here. Thank you very much for letting me talk.
Thank you. To me, one of the most important things about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is sponsorship. I've called my sponsors a lot, and I use a lot of sponsors. And I don't want to say that. I've used several different people through the years as sponsors. But also, one of the even more important to me is the people I sponsor. Just the other day, you know, things were bananas around the house with people slamming doors and me yelling at the kids, and taking out my frustrations on everybody around me and really, you know, displaying a lot of character defects. And I just had screamed at one of the kids about something, you know, and then a phone rang. And it's one of the people I sponsor. And wow, all of a sudden, you know, I've got to change roles from being an idiot to being somebody trying to help somebody. And by having several people that call me, you know, I have to get back into this role of being a sane person fairly often, and so it keeps me semi-sane. And so, you know, my sponsees keep me sober, and they keep me sane, and I couldn't live without them. And so for the newer people, I hope you realize that. You know, every time you call your sponsor, you're keeping them alive. And one of my sponsors is sitting here, and I haven't called her for a long time. And I'll have to call her and keep her sane. But I'd like to call out one of the people I sponsor, Phil.
I'm an addict and alcoholic, and my name's Phil. I've been going through a lot of the changes lately. I've been having to do a lot of talking to my sponsor. But when I saw the agenda and it said half measures availed as half, that's exactly where I'm at. I'm afraid to surrender and give up completely to the whole thing. There's some of the things I liked about my old life that I don't want to give up. And one of them, I'm a very dependent person. That's why I made it here. Chemically and alcohol and people. And when I become too dependent on one person or any one person, I tend to blow everything for myself. It's neat for me to be here. I'm really glad. Just one thing that I had to come. I felt I had to. It was uncomfortable for me, and I'm glad I'm here. And there's something that everybody out there has that I want and is trying to get, and it's sobriety. And I want it to be a good one. I hate to do anything halfway through, but it's hard for me to start. Thank you.
Well, I'm going to call on somebody who I regularly get into arguments with, and I go home thinking, I'm going to kill that guy. But, in fact, there's two people in this room that I do that with all the time, but the other one's just going to have to sit on it. But I think I'll get that fuzzy-haired man over there, Barry.
I'm Barry, and I'm an alcoholic. And that's the shittiest introduction I've ever had. Tack. That's my tack sponsor out there. No fault me to swear, so I can be tactful now. But anyway, things used to be awful different for me than they are now. I used to have fun then, you know. And I don't have fun anymore. I really don't. I used to really have a good time. I used to sit at home getting ready to go out at night, you know. And you know how you get ready to go out at night, right? You comb your hair and you have two glasses of wine. And I'd get ready to go out at night, you know, maybe smoke a little something on the way. And then I'd get to a bar, you know. But that's where you go out too. And I'd sit down at the bar and I'd sort of check out on both sides of me, and I'd see this nice looking young lady sitting down at a couple, and I started, you know, going on in my mind, and, you know, I had the fantasy trip all planned out, how we were going to, you know, I was going to have a couple of drinks, and then I was going to offer to buy her a drink, and, you know, she was going to immediately fall in love with me, and we were going to, you know, phone her out to my car and go home, and it was going to be real beautiful, and I started on that plan, and I'd have a couple of drinks. And I'd have a couple more drinks, and I'd have a couple more drinks, and pretty soon I'd have to go to the John, and I'd walk into the John, you know, and I'd slip and I'd fall in the urinal, and I'd get up and I'd go back out and sit down next to her, and she'd sniff at me and get up and leave, and I'd walk outside and I couldn't find the key to my car, and finally about the time I got in my car, I'd puke on myself, and then I'd drive home. And, you know, now things just aren't like that anymore, you know. And so I've really lost a lot by coming into this program. And, you know, it's really different now. It really is. I don't have those kinds of thrilling experiences. I still have the fantasy trips, but they usually don't wind up in exactly the same way. You know, it's funny, I've been on the program about 6.5 years, and I bet I've been to 100 conferences, conventions, roundups, retreats, etc. And if somebody knows how to handle a Roundup, will you tell me? You know, I still haven't figured out how the fuck to do it. I mean, really, you know, somebody comes up to me and says, how you doing, Barry? I say, oh, it's your basic convention. I've been totally elated 6 times and wanted to kill myself 5, you know? And, you know, somebody, I wish I'd hear somebody that had 100 years in the program or something, has been through 1,000 of these things, and finally figured out how the fuck to handle them, because I can't. I always sit about, you know, I start working on it about a week before I come down here, you know, and I say, okay, you know, this time it's going to be different, right? Maybe I'm a social convention goer, huh? This time it's going to be different, you know, this time I'm not going to fall into the same traps I fell into last time. This time I'm going to do this, and I got, you know, I got the whole thing planned out, you know. And then I get there, and it lasts about 30 seconds, and I'm back and saying, oh, fuck, what do I do now, you know? So these things are real trips for me, but they always accomplish something. You know, it's funny. I get real lazy, you know. I mean, I really do. My ass starts to mold into the chair, and it gets real comfortable, and I just go to settle back down, and I stop growing. And, you know, for me to stop growing is like instant pain. You know, I can always tell when I stop growing. That's when I wake up in the morning and look outside and go, oh, fuck. And, but, you know, conferences and conventions really do something to me, you know. And what they do is they screw up my head. And then I go home for a week and I have to get off my ass and work it out, you know, or I can't live. And that working it out is my way of growing, you know. I have to sit down and say, you know, where are you at and where do you want to go? And, you know, what's right in your life and what's not right in your life and what are you going to do about it? And, you know, I guess that's the reason I keep coming, because, you know, even though, you know, I always say that, you know, a weekend roundup is like living about 15 years for me, you know. It really does inspire me to go on and to reassess, reevaluate, dig into my program a little bit deeper. Another thing is, I guess I'm just hooked on the people, you know. There's people here, it's just amazing, there's people here that I see about 4 times or 5 times a year. But if I didn't see those people, there'd be something missing out of my life. You know, it's hard to understand for me. I can't explain it, but, you know, it's funny that the amount of importance I put on people is not directly proportional to how much time I see them anymore. You know, there's people that I can see just a couple of times a year and really love them a lot, you know. And I think that's another reason I come here. But I want to thank Nancy for calling on me.
I think I forgot to mention that if you want a tape of this meeting, Jack has them for sale and sign up for them after the meeting. It's time to close. I've certainly enjoyed this. The one time here, I get to really see some new faces and some old friends from out of town and see some faces I don't normally see through the year. And I'd like to really thank you for letting me chair the meeting. I'd like to thank Lady Nancy. She certainly does a good job. And I'd like you to do me a favor and all form a circle, one circle, and we'll say the Lord's Prayer. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.